Hello, my name's Eliza. I'm a planner and your host. This is Funeral Planner Podcast. Today, I'll be talking to Yancy Salmeron about who she is, how she could be remembered, and if all that could be creatively encapsulated in her end-of-life plans. On this podcast, I would love to reevaluate the stigma of talking about this part of the life cycle and even find joy in thinking about what matters most to each of us. I also hope that recording these ideas will be useful someday and that thinking about how we want to be remembered reminds us each of how we want to live. And with that, let's meet our amazing guest, Yancy. Hello, Yancy.
Hello.
Thank you so much for your support of this project of mine, for responding and reaching out about it. And I know we'll get into your intro, but you're working in healthcare, and I'm interested to hear how those experiences, school, your life has shaped Yancy you bring to this. So I'll ask a few intro questions to introduce yourself, and let's see. When you say your name for us, hello.
Yes. Hi, I'm Yancy Salmeron.
And what are your pronouns, Yancy?
She, her.
And your race and ethnicity?
I honestly have been thinking about that a lot recently, and I chose that question because I don't want to talk about it, but I think it's important to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. I identify as Black, I identify as Latina, and those have been things I've been grappling with recently, just because it's not, Blackness isn't something that has been acknowledged in my family growing up. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And as to share our knowledge of each other, we went to high school together and was unacknowledged in my knowing you as well. So mm-hmm. This is all, I understand why you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
And your sexuality and gender identity are?
I identify as female and bisexual.
Okay. And let's see, your age is?
28.
28. Mm-hmm. And we are now the same age. My birthday was yesterday. So I know. Happy birthday. I know.
I need to put that in my calendar, because if it's not in my calendar, I don't know it.
I know. That's how I am too. One of my birthday presents was like a birthday and a dress book. So now I'm like, great, I'm locked in.
Ew. Yeah.
Okay, and let's see. I have these in a different order on my checklist, but I'm going to ask, mm-hmm. where are your parents from?
Mm. Yeah, so my parents were both born in El Salvador, in the, mm-hmm. basically the mountains. The tiny little canton is what they're called. Mm-hmm. Mountains of Salvador.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up in Houston, mm-hmm. until I was 14, mm-hmm. and then did high school with you in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
And
then you've been in Providence and Philly since then, and Houston since then.
Yeah. I did Houston for 2 years after graduating, and then been in Philly since then.
Lovely. We mm-hmm. love Philly. And what languages do you speak?
So I first learned Spanish, and then I learned English when I started school, and then know a bit of French.
Awesome. Yes, I remember you took that. Mm-hmm. Did you take it in college, too?
I did. Okay. I took it just a little bit.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. And what religious, spiritual belief system or community do you ascribe to?
Mm-hmm. Currently, I would say I don't ascribe to any. I grew up Catholic, and then when I was about 13, my parents had a revolutionary experience where they then became evangelical. Mm. So from about then until I was about 24, I went to church with them, and there were some years where I definitely did feel myself to be evangelical and to ascribe to those beliefs. But then, you know, just grappling with the more political and systemic, you know, yeah. Parts of religion, and I just strayed away from it. So currently, nothing really.
Yeah. And what socioeconomic class background or class, current and past, whatever you want to share, are you?
Yeah. So I definitely grew up working class. And I guess now, since I've gone to college and I've had a couple of jobs, I definitely feel like I was able to financially support myself and my mm-hmm. family better. But now I'm back in med school, so I'm not making an income. But yeah. I definitely don't feel, I feel very, very lucky to now be able to live in a space where I don't feel like we're, you know, bill to bill, like I was growing up. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And you touched on what your profession is, the next question is your professional aspirations, which you're in that, both those territories. So what are those? What does that look like for you?
Yes. So I'm in my second year of medical school, and I'm actually trying to go into ENT. I am hoping to pursue that I really am excited about surgery, but also patient, you know, clinic patient interaction.
Yeah.
But also I want to have a good life. I want to get off work at a reasonable time and be able to spend some time doing other things I love outside of medicine.
Amen to that. Tell me what were your other professional, if you wouldn't mind sharing, experiences before med school?
Uh-huh. So after I graduated, I did 2 years of teaching back in Houston in the same school district that I went to when I was a kid, mm-hmm. taught sixth grade math. And then I moved to Philadelphia because my partner started medical school here. And I worked at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for 2 years. And I was doing clinical research with a violence intervention program, mm-hmm. working with kids who were violently assaulted in the community, mm-hmm. and trying to get them support and access to whatever resources they needed.
Amazing. Wonderful. And the last question is, what makes you feel most alive?
Whenever I'm outside and specifically doing something that is, I would say more active, like running or hiking or being in the ocean.
Yeah.
I feel myself breathe. Yeah.
I see that. It makes me think of probably my most notable, I would say top five memories with you, Yancy, is being in, which is probably a trauma-infused memory, is being in the kayak, the ocean kayaks. Strapped in, trying to do whitewater kayaking, I guess, surf kayaking,
yes.
And you just being like, Mr. Dennison, like, what are you doing with us? And I was like, yeah, what she said. Help. Yeah, that was scary, but fun. But talk about feeling most alive.
One thing I wish I could do more often, but
wow. Definitely feel most alive. The next segment is just a little rumination on something I've been thinking about this topic, death, dying, end of life, or how we live. And I don't know if you've heard of Anderson Cooper's new podcast. It's called All There Is with Anderson Cooper. And so Anderson Cooper lost his dad when he was 10, I think heart disease. His mom is Gloria Vanderbilt,
mm-hmm.
of the Vanderbilts. And mm-hmm. His mom he just lost like a year or two ago, kind of age illness. Mm-hmm. And his older brother when he was mid-20s of who died by suicide. And so he has now started this podcast as he's kind of going through his mom's home items of his dad's, his mom's, his brother's that he's coming across that his mom saved, and just talking about his grief, their lives, loss. He blubbers like a baby in it. It's amazing. And one of the big takeaways that he shares is just when you, this idea that really connected with me, it's this idea of when we lose someone, when they, it's not a novel idea, but just the way he articulated it of,
mm-hmm.
he was talking about holding his son and he had a nanny who took care of him in that way when he was a baby, the way his son is a baby.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about when he's holding his son, it's May, his nanny. It's May's hands that are holding him. When I bathe him, they're May's hands. When I look at him, they're May's eyes. And just how within him, I choke up talking about it. It's within him, May is love, and that particular love that is like in, it's inseparable for him to like do things with her love, the love she taught him, and not embody her. So I just have really connected with that, and I try to share something vulnerable before I ask you some to share my guest to ask various vulnerable things. So that has touched me recently.
Beautiful.
And we'll see how that sort of thing comes up for you. But we can start with the big guns question. The first one is asking you what do you think happens after you die, and what has led you to hold this belief?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that probably pursuing a career in medicine has more led me to just the kind of ideas that I have now, but also just some imagination. But I, you know, we're made up of chemicals. Everything that we perceive is just little action potentials that are firing. And mm-hmm. so I think about when we die, those action potentials, I guess, aren't firing the mm-hmm. same, but we still are these chemicals. We still are these particles. And so I imagine that those interact in a different way, but mm-hmm. they're still there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so although I don't know exactly what that means, I think that we continue on within these particles in some way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just you're just vibrating there like matter
right.
knocking up against other particles and there's no consciousness, but I do wonder what it means to still be those molecules but just not be acting together
mm-hmm.
as they were when we were alive.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's definitely one of my favorite articulations of this. I mean, it brings to mind the, like, Octavia Butler idea of change and, like, just God is change and everything is
yes.
just changing into to different forms. And the link that connects it all, peace with what, excuse me, with what is lost and gained by, not just what is lost, but also what is gained by those molecules doing different things.
Yeah. Oh, I really love that you mentioned that, because I hadn't thought about that in a long time, but just that idea that God has changed. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. Octavia is amazing. And what, with those chemical changes, what do you want to happen to your body after you die?
Yeah, I would, you know, in an ideal world, I'd be buried just like my body, you know, in a way that makes sense for the planet. I'd just be the body in the ground. Mm-hmm. But I did hear you talking about the mushroom suit thing. Yes. I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of that before, and that something like that would be really cool to just be a part of the ground again.
Yeah, to use the existing mushroom resources to help change those chemicals into friendly things.
Yeah.
Nice. Absolutely. And then what, in that situation, what at this point in your life, what do you want? Or I shouldn't even say what at this point in your life. You can choose if you're thinking of this as a future thing or a now thing. General guidelines. What would you want your funeral or memorial to look like?
Yeah. So I think one of my favorite things about, I guess, being alive has been, like I just said to you, being outside. And so I would like for people that were to join at my funeral to be outside and to feel the air. But I'd also just like them to have meaningful conversations. I think that's another thing that has made me feel the most alive, when I've gotten to experience that change within myself and within the person that I'm speaking with. When you get to, I don't know, certain groundbreaking moments in your understanding of self and the world around you. So I'd love for people to be able to do that, I guess, just like in the spirit of one of the things I loved the most.
Shift in question, who would you want to make decisions for you if you didn't have capacity anymore? Who and another way to say that is, who would you choose to be your healthcare proxy?
Yeah, so I would mainly have Dan, my fiance, be that person for me. And I would also like him to be working with my little sister, Yevi, who is currently just 17, but I think she is one of the most insightful, brilliant people that I know. And I think they would work together and do a really great job.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for a lot of us that, like, I remember George said in his, like, it would be me, but I would, there's no world in which I wouldn't consult with his mom. Like, there would have to be involvement from family as well.
Different
other family definition.
Right.
And what would you say to those people, that person, to help them make decisions for you at this point? Some other ways to think about this are giving them advice on what you're willing to give up for the sake of more time. What does quality of life mean to you? What makes life worth living? When would it not be? And what are you most afraid of about death or dying? And obviously, this is like a difficult question in the context of ability sensitivity, disability sensitivity, but maybe some loose thoughts or guidelines.
Yeah.
Advice.
Yeah, I think the great thing is that Dan is in medicine, and hopefully by then he'd be an emergency medicine doctor, and so my hope would be that whoever are my healthcare providers, that they explain the actual science of what's happening to me to him, so that he has the complete understanding of what is happening in my body to then be able to make a decision with that data.
Totally.
And in terms of what is worth extending my life, I think that would just go back to that, you know, what is the my prognosis based on, you know, how I'm doing. I wouldn't want to, I think if there's no chance that I'll really regain consciousness, I don't think that I would want to continue
absolutely.
Living for very long. And what else did you ask? Something I'm scared of?
Sometimes people like, it is informative to this answer to think about what they're most afraid of about death. Like, some people are more afraid of being kept alive too long. Some people are afraid of people not giving them enough time to recover. So, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think I am not, I guess I'm not particularly scared of either being left too long or too short. If, you know, we're working under the understanding that Dan is aware of what's happening, because I really do fully trust his.
You have that advocate.
Yeah.
I think that for those of us in health, for myself, like, I don't know how anyone, I mean, I feel like for my family members, it's difficult enough navigating the healthcare system with a healthcare background. It's very difficult watching people who do not have any healthcare background navigate it. And I wish everybody had a little personal, like a Dan in their life.
But you know what, though? Like, hearing you then say that, I'm thinking of the person that's placed in that position, you know, whose life partner has just passed away. And, yeah, you have that understanding of, you know, how the body works, but how able are you to access that information, and how kind is it to assume that he'll just, you know, take this information on and be able to process it while also grieving the loss of his partner. So, yeah, I think he's, if there's going to be anybody in my life that would be able to really hold those things, I think it would be him. But I can see just how difficult it would be for me to be in that position.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very hard to make decisions in those. You like used the word prognosis before, if the prognosis were 3 months or less to live, and you had full capacity of doing whatever you wanted, what three things would you prioritize doing?
I would definitely want people to know. And I would first prioritize going back to the connections with people that I currently regret losing. I definitely have a lot of those, mainly from before Kate. I went through so many changes while we were at Kate that I was unable to prioritize those friendships and relationships. And so actually, just thinking about, you know, having this conversation with you, I have been thinking about being more intentional in trying to get back and doing the work that it takes to, I guess, like, save those relationships. So I would want to make sure I did that, because these are people that were important to me at one point. I wouldn't want to die without, you know, coming back to that. Friendship. Definitely that, with the people that I've lost touch with, but then also just the people that I love, just being able to spend time with them and be outdoors and not be involved in fights, you know, like, be with my family, but, like, please don't,
keep it,
you know,
chill.
Just fun times, please. I'm about to die.
Come on. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that, like, just what you're saying about people you lost touch it, like you're renewing, finding a relationship with them in a new way and in this new time in your life. And I would think that in addition to this kind of conversation, for me too, planning a wedding and thinking about a new phase of your life as a, you know, in what community you want, you're intentionally choosing to support your commitment to this other person, and your life together, the new family that you're growing, that comes up as well.
So maybe that's a little bit also that of what's influencing my desire to bring those connections back up.
Good for me. So now I'm going to choose two of the so-called fun questions. The first that I would like to ask is, what food and beverage would you like at this outdoor funeral
session?
sharing of minds.
I think it would be a lot like what I hope to have at my wedding. Actually, no, there's some things that I probably won't have at my wedding, but that are just my favorite things in the world. So my all-time favorite food is a Salvadorian dish that's called pan con pollo, literally means bread with chicken, but it's like a big, like, French roll that is doused. That means to be, like, covered in, right? With sort of like a chicken stew that is made that has potatoes and green beans and carrots and all of these things. And it's just, like, all over there. It has... Anyway, it's delicious. It's the best thing ever. I'm having it on the 31st. And we would have... tres leches cake as well. Pan con pollo. Tres leches cake and horchata as well. So unfortunately, for my diabetic family, it would be
a difficult
maybe not
day.
The best, but maybe, you know, I died, so enjoy it.
There you go. Wonderful. Thank you for including that. I love horchata. And excited to look at. We're my family's all together right now, and we're like cooking a lot. There's not a lot of restaurants around where we are, so maybe I'll check out the pan con pollo recipe.
It will be good, but not as good as it will be if my mom makes it.
Absolutely.
So someday,
I'll be humble about it. let's see what I would like to ask next. You checked, it's a sensitive one, but it kind of touches on the people thing you said, but what regrets are you worried about having?
Yeah, so I think that would be definitely, if I weren't able to get to those relationships, that would be something I would regret. But also just right now, life is really hard, and I just have felt like the past... I don't know, like 7 years just have been sort of like a constant depression. And it's been hard to really feel like I'm alive and appreciating, you know, my life in the way that I should be. So the unfortunate thing, or I guess what I keep hoping for is, you know, I gotta get through this. And then I'll have the time to really live. But what I'm nervous I will regret is all of these years when I was just thinking, I'll get there. I just gotta get there. I just gotta make it through this. And yeah, sure, it's like temporary, but it is also my whole life. Right now, this is my life. And so I hope that I'm able to get to a place where I can make it through this really difficult time, just academically, but also be able to appreciate what I am experiencing and find some joy in that. Absolutely. So that I don't end up regretting it.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like from your consciousness about choosing a specialty in a workplace that has balance, you're conscious of making sure that a cycle doesn't continue in a way that is untenable or unbalanced. I hear you. I think that feeling like you're slogging through it. Mm-hmm. Is a brutal feeling, and like you see the light at the end of the tunnel, sort of, but you want it to be light where you are right now.
Exactly, because you don't know, how much longer. Like, will I even make it to that point? I don't know.
Right. Think not being always in the hereafter.
Yeah.
Well, I think anyone who, being not in medical school, but school myself, mm-hmm. and my friends who are in medical school, I think it is this admirable but brutal mm-hmm. chasing of a dream. The powers that be. And the necessity of the complexity of the human body puts you through is very difficult. So I hope you continue to you find those pinholes of light in the tunnel you're in, and come up for air as you seem to be in a moment of right now mm-hmm. with the holidays.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Yeah. I think also just 20s are we're figuring out what we want to do and how we want to lay the what we feel like is the foundation for the rest of our life, sort of.
Mhm. Mhm. You saying, laying the foundation makes me think of something one of my friends from med school said to me recently, that she was also in a relatively dark period. And one thing that she realized is that she didn't like who she was becoming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She kept thinking of who she wanted to be eventually, but not who she was becoming in this moment.
Mm.
And so while we do lay this foundation, it is a foundation, period. Yeah. So I need to be thinking, who am I becoming day to day, instead of who I will be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is, thanks Michelle Obama, the becoming book, kind of hitting us over the head with it. We're always becoming. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And I'm going to choose the third last question, I was between two, and I'm choosing, I might ask you two more. Who do you want to go through your stuff after you, if you were to die?
I actually would want my sister, Yaeli, mm-hmm. and Camille.
Oh my God, Camille.
Yeah!
The honor of a lifetime that she deserves. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think they both are.
Camille, to the readers, is a crazy coincidence friend of Yancy and I's who I
you introduced
fell
us.
In love with. Yeah. Oh, yes, that's true. I went on a trip to Ecuador with Camille that was living and doing a building a soccer stands in a community in rural Ecuador, and so Camille and I fell in love there, and platonic love. And then when Yancy went to college, Camille was going to the same college, and I connected them, yes. And they it really worked out.
Like, literally from the get-go.
Yeah, so great. Well, she's so amazing. Shout out to Camille. Good. And so they would go through your personal possessions. Yeah, I just actually, so my a friend of mine is going, just had to go through her mom is was moving from at her house to an apartment, and is like going and is also sick, so she's getting, you know, either stuff is short-term use for by her, is use for burn for the rest of her life, for or given away, Goodwill or friends. And yeah, just going through, I almost want to, I remember my grandma would make me put would be like, you should write your name on the back of things in my house, like, for, and I almost want to do that, just like put a little piece of tape on things with who, if I were to die suddenly, who I would want it to be gifted to. I mean, but it's as is the balance with all of these things, the, the, with even the existential purpose of this podcast in general, like, I'm also would be happy with people, like, when my grandmother died, we didn't really do that too much, so, like, I, you know, some of the things that I took, that I went through with my cousins, and I took this, they took that, it's still meaningful to me, but I think it is, it adds a extra layer of meaning if I was like, oh, she put this aside, like, she had this in mind for me.
So. And it also does take away some of that responsibility from the family themselves, because that can be so stressful. You can get in fights over who gets what.
Oh my god, and, like, if anything was, like, too, not too private for a family, but maybe just something you wouldn't want them to see, then Camille finds it. And that's okay. Exactly.
These are two great people to find whatever is out there.
Whatever is out there. Good. The last one I'll ask is if yourself on your deathbed could tell yourself now anything, what would you, what do you think you would, future you would say to yourself now?
Yeah, I love that question. Okay. It's so sweet and thoughtful. I would just want to tell myself, you really did the best that you could with everything that you had, and I love you.
That's a really good one, Yance. I like, I've been trying to, whenever I'm frustrated with, being frustrated with a friend recently or something, like, I'm like, they are doing their freaking best, Eliza. They're doing their best, and I do love them, and let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. You know? And that is a hard-ass thing to do when it's, like, interpersonal, you know, like, sometimes people hurt you, but you do, are doing the best they can.
Yeah, and when you know you're, when I know I'm messing up sometimes, I'm like, but I do think I am doing my best. So,
exactly. It's a good thing to console yourself with, knowing that there wasn't anything else I could have done in that moment.
And as we learn about, like, even, like, Michelle Obama is a good example, like, as we learn about folks we hold up to high regard, I think as we get older, you realize, oh, them doing their best doesn't look like perfect all the time. Like, people doing their best really never is, perfect all the time.
Right. And also just thinking about, like, regrets, you know, what regrets I'm afraid of having.
Yeah.
If I do trust and fully believe that even though I may be feeling, you know, a little bit more muted than I would otherwise, knowing that I did do the best that I could with all of the capacity that I had in the moment, hopefully, even though I can acknowledge, I was depressed for all those years, but I really did the best that I could.
Yeah.
hopefully I wouldn't have any regrets about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And even have, like, an element of being proud of yourself for the life that you led.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Having grace.
Grace. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
For yourself.
Grace and love. Good. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, that is, I think that's a great question to end our question, well, end the last segment. The uh-huh. next one is music time, ba-da-ba-ba-da. And I ask if you would have a song played at your funeral, or a song you would want to be played, like, during your active death period, if that was possible, or mm-hmm. a song that makes you feel most alive, mm-hmm. Anything in these situations, what comes to mind, something that would be meaningful?
Yeah, I mean, immediately, like, no doubts, it's Bad Bunny.
it should be really Bad Bunny in person in your hospital room performing.
Ooh, girl, I think I'd be like, never mind, I'm not dying.
I'm gonna stick around for this. Actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just his music just makes me feel so present in my body.
Yeah,
and I don't know that I would want that played as I'm actively dying, right. but I would want it to be played at my funeral. I would want people to, you know, hopefully feel a little bit of what I felt every time that I listened to any one of his songs.
Amazing. I feel like that definitely goes with the vibe of the funeral, you know, leave space for the weight of what would be a loss, but it also has a vivaciousness, viva life, like, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. It's mostly, like, I would want people to experience my favorite things, this is the last thing that I want to give to you, like, here are the things that made me the happiest, and hopefully you can take away a little bit of that.
Is there a particular song that is your favorite?
I think the one that was my favorite for a while is called Después de la Playa.
Okay.
Because it starts out a certain way and then it surprises you and all of a sudden is salsa and it's so alive and fun. But I think that's the one that comes to mind.
Awesome.
But in general, just anything.
And can you tell us briefly about your experience seeing Bad Bunny in Philly at Made in America? Yancey reached out to me looking for back doors into the Made in America concert, which is a real, like, a good question for, and I told her, like, there's a bridge that you can kind of see the Made in America state, because I went to that concert in college. It happens every year in Philly, but Bad Bunny played this year, and Yancey did end up going.
Dude, I mean, I really thought about finding a way to sneak in, but I didn't want to risk not seeing him.
Yeah.
And so I did end up buying the ticket, and it was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Dan and I went with another one of our couple friends, who I guess husband now, because they're married now, is probably just as much of a fan as I am. So we were able to sing out every single one of the words, and his wife and Dan were like,
yeah,
here's one word I know.
Yeah.
And here's another word
chorus.
I know. But it was, oh God, it was amazing.
Awesome. I would think that my friend went to his concert in New York and just said, I mean, yeah, it just seems like his fans are the best and know every single one. Like, the whole concert, every single person is screaming at the top of their lungs every word. And it's like a collective experience. Yeah, it's like as much about him as it is about the community of it.
Yeah, man, he has quite the effect on people.
Yeah, he's good. Great, so Bad Bunny. well, to wrap things up. I told you I'd been out of practice, and I forgot to ask at the beginning, like, how you're feeling going into this conversation. Like, is there, sometimes for people, it's, like, personal loss, you know, bubbles coming up, or it's discomfort with, like, you know, being recorded, or it's excitement to get things off your chest, like, so just to wrap things up, how has this felt, and any final thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's felt a lot more like just having a conversation with an old friend than it is, you know, planning your funeral.
Right.
But when I think about, I guess, death, I just, like, have the most salient, you know, people that come to mind are a friend and cousin that I lost when I was really young, actually, one right before high school and another one during high school. And there are deaths that I was never able to process fully. And so, I mean, not until, like, probably a couple of years ago, but I guess they're all that they weren't able to experience, you know, because they did die so young, and their lives were taken from them, you know. And yeah, it was horrible. And so the way that I want to live my life is greatly affected by, you know, them not being able to. And so finally putting these things into words is something that I knew was important but never did. So I'm really glad. I was excited to have the space for it. And now that it's done, feel really happy that that it's done and it's out there.
Yeah, it's out there. In you and out there. Yeah. Wonderful. Well, yeah, really a pleasure. I feel like actually, can I ask you one more question about how, any thoughts on how, like, medical school or your experience with, in, like, clinical spaces has changed your perception of these such things so far?
Yeah, I mean, I unfortunately haven't been able to have very many clinical experiences just because it's been 2 years of just schoolwork. But I guess just in general, my understanding of just how the body works has, I guess, shaped my ideas of what happens when you die.
Yeah.
I actually talked about you in one of my classes right before break, because we do these cases, you know, where you are presented with information about a patient and you work together as a group to try to figure out, you know, what's happening with them. And one of the things that we had to discuss for this patient was just end of life care and how you, as a healthcare provider, like, what your role is in having those conversations with the family and with the patient, and how to navigate that. And so that was a space where I just was reminded about this work that you're doing to help people, you know, think about this before they're really put, you know, what is it, back against a wall or whatever the saying is. That was a cool space to think about it, you know, as a healthcare professional as well. You know, what will that look like for me?
Good. I'm glad they had that case.
Like, yeah.
The goal to have more education about that sort of thing. Wonderful. Well, thank you for answering my extra questions and the ones you knew about. thank you for making the time and sharing thoughtfully, with love, and being I think I always think of this as, like, even if no one listens to it, I really don't care, but whoever listens to it will have it's a treat to just hear you work through things and and your wisdom. So thank you, Yancy.
Thank you.